you know, if you're in a minority, there's this expectation, you know, you really want to, you know, use your identity and, you know, sell it. Maybe I don't want to sell myself, you know, like maybe shouldn't, things shouldn't be monetized in that way.
You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. Today's guest is director Sabrina Catuno. Sabrina has been a storyboard artist and director on shows like Gravity Falls, Star vs. the Forces of Evil, The Owl House, as well as had an overall deal for their own development work. But everyone has to start somewhere. And while they had internships with Pixar and Disney Feature under their belt, Sabrina still didn't get hired right away. They share how they stayed motivated to keep moving forward, testing for shows and finding freelance before finally breaking in. Sabrina also talks about working on their webcomic, The Glass Scientists, even when they were gainfully employed. And just a side note, this interview was conducted in the fall of 2020. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy.
Hi, my name is Sabrina Catuno. I am a director, a storyboard artist, and trying to become a writer for animation. I have worked on such shows as Gravity Falls, Star vs. the Forces of Evil, and The Owl House most recently. I also run a webcomic called The Glass Scientists on the side.
You're so prolific, and I'm so excited to have you on the show to talk about how you're able to do all of it and how you kind of, you know, navigated to it. Becoming a director like you are now. But I think that's awesome that you're working to get into writing. How did that come about?
So basically for the last year, I was working on an overall deal at Disney Television, which basically means that they pay you to develop either your own show or work on someone else's development project full time. In my case, I was working on my own show. And during that process, I got to write my own pilots, got to write all the story Bibles, et cetera. They were supposed to hire me a writer, but then they kind of forgot. Things got a little bit off schedule. So I was just like, I'll just write it myself. I don't see why I can't, you know, I've been writing my webcomic for 5 years. And as you know, at CalArts, it's normal that you create your own films from scratch. You don't work with a writer who writes it for you. And so I was just like, I'll just do it. Why couldn't I do it? I work in story. And they were very surprised that I could write words with my typing fingers. It's surprising that like people don't realize that story artists can also write things. So I discovered that I really, really like that and I want to keep doing it. Just because I enjoyed getting into the story structure stuff, getting into character, getting into plot. And that's something you get to do to some extent as a board artist, but like I'd like to get into that primarily if I can.
I also find it surprising that people think that there's a difference between the storyboard artists that, you know, like, of course they can write. They are story artists, you know.
Yeah.
But let's go all the way back to your origin story. Where are you from?
I'm from Los Angeles, so I'm one of the people who was actually born and raised here.
That's amazing. There's not many of you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I grew up near, like, in the kind of the UCLA area is where my parents live.
So origin story, when was the moment that you realized you wanted to work in animation?
Ratatouille. I saw that in theaters. That was pretty much, like, the deciding moment, I'd say. A bit of an unfortunate choice, I think. I think you go into animation, you know, thinking that, you know, oh, they're all going to be these whimsical flights of fancy. And then you finally get to Pixar in, you know, 2010 is when I entered there for the first time. And they're making Cars 2, which is a heck of a wake-up call. But it was Ratatouille. Ratatouille was the first one.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. It's such a good movie. And you had mentioned earlier that you went to CalArts. Was it tough to get in?
I think it's quite a competitive school. I think it always has been. I'm such a nerd. I really loved applying to colleges. I have like this weird hobby. Like I love if someone just gives me a checklist and it's like, if you do all these super correctly, you get a pat on the head. I'll be like, yes, I'll do that all day, every day. So I just loved like researching the schools, you know, tailoring each portfolio to each specific school. Like I did RISD, I did like the three bicycle assignment they have you do. And CalArts were like very figure drawing focused. And so I was like very careful. I've been planning it for years. So I was like, I was on top of it. And I specifically remember at the time, I think CalArts may have required like a physical portfolio. I mean, I remember the day I dropped off that portfolio. I got super lost on the way. But like, yeah, I'm a big nerd. For me, like applying to colleges was a big adventure. And I loved it because I like rules. So for me, yes, it was pretty, like, certainly I think I was very aware of how difficult it was to get in. You know, I'd done all the research. I knew the acceptance rate. So I think I had a good idea going in. And so it didn't really surprise me as much.
Mm-hmm. I love that you geared each portfolio to the school specifically. I feel like just like getting a job where you want a portfolio like specifically for the mm-hmm. role you're applying for, like it makes so much sense to specifically put the portfolio to who you're applying to.
Oh no, that's so important for college, you know, like I realize your audience is a little bit older than that, but I think if I give, you know, advice to younger students, you always have to know like which schools are you applying to specifically, because it's so different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your internships, because you mentioned that you interned at Pixar and mm-hmm. Disney Animation. Did you intern during school or was that right after you graduated?
So I did a lot. I interned at Pixar for Story in 2010. That was the Cars 2 year. And then after that, I interned for them again in art. In 2012, right after I graduated.
You can and... do that? That's so amazing.
Sorry? You mean like doing more than one?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm not sure they even noticed, to be honest. I think, who knows if it's allowed, but you know, they didn't catch me. The internships are really, really different. Like at Pixar, compared to Disney, all the interns of all the disciplines, at least for the training program when I was there, it may be different now. This is back in 2012. You basically were in this big room together with a whole bunch of computers set up. And you'd have different assignments based on your discipline, but you all kind of socialize together. At Pixar, each program is structured differently, so there's not necessarily all that much interaction. The Story internship is very classroom-based. So it's basically just like a really intensive storyboarding class where your teachers happen to be, you know, Pixar artists, no pressure. Whereas in art, all the interns are separated across the studio on various disciplines, not on disciplines, on various films. I was put on a film. At the time, everyone was so jealous. It was like, oh my God, this film sounds so cool. It's about dinosaurs. Wow. Oh my God, you work on the dinosaur film. And then people saw the story reels and were not jealous anymore because it was, of course, The Good Dinosaur, which is a movie. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a movie. Long story short is that like they're very different internships, so it was a very, very different experience both times. And then after that, I did not get hired onto The Good Dinosaur, as no one did, because it was just about to have a 2-year delay. I interned at Disney Feature for visual development, roughly 2 weeks, I would say not 2 weeks, 3 weeks before I got the job. I actually got notices. I was in the finalist round for both the Story and the visual development internships, which was great. Loved that. But after my experience working on The Good Dinosaur, I discovered that like, I don't actually like visual development that much. So I want to go into Story. And then I got a phone call from the recruiter at Disney Feature. And he said, so we've actually decided that you should go into visual development. You're not good enough for Story.
Oh, no.
He didn't say that in so many words, but it was like, your story sense isn't very strong. Like, you're not very good at basic storytelling. And I still disagree with the note he gave me. He gave me a specific story note on my, on like the short board that I submitted. I don't think this is a valid note, but whatever. That was like 7 years ago. It's fine. But they insisted that I should go into visual development. And so I basically spent the entire trainee program pestering the story interns, trying basically pretending like I was one of them, which hopefully wasn't too annoying.
I love it.
But yeah, lots of internships.
Yeah. I like that you just, you want the information, you go get it, even if you have to bother some other interns for it.
Mm-hmm. They were really nice. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, that's great. How wild that they chose visual development for you right when you decided that that's not where you wanted to be. I feel like internships are for making artists stronger in their craft. So I'm surprised they didn't think, oh, not strong enough, but we could fix that because they really like you. But I wish they would think like that.
It's really, I'm not sure why they chose my visual development portfolio, because I really do think I was weaker in that one and still think so. I still have like flashbacks to seeing like the final marks I got on my presentation for VizDev. I believe from 1 to 10, Shun Kim gave me a 2, which we love to see. Yeah. A nice, nice, honest review. But I was so checked out at that point. I was like, I can tell, like, the people here are way too talented. I'm not, I don't belong here. I'm not supposed to be here. They saw visual development for some reason. I'll never know what they saw, but you know, that's their opinion, and that's fine.
Yeah. And so what happened after the internship? Did you get hired, or like, when was your first job?
It was a while later. I feel like, you know, a lot of people apply for these internships hoping that they'll be able to land a job. I mean, that's one of the main points of landing an internship at these major studios, right? Right. Well, after the story internship, I limped my way through that one. The story internship is known for being pretty brutal, but I was really, really not prepared, to be super honest. I was able to, you know, to learn a lot through it, but I feel like whenever anyone describes something as a learning experience, it's like, what they mean is it was an awful experience. I mean, it wasn't awful, but it was tough. It was very difficult. There was a lot of crying involved. I'm fine. But like I knew very early on, like, I'm not landing a job. And plus I had 2 more years of school, so I wasn't even that focused on landing a job out of there. And also, I had gotten news that spring that I had been chosen to be part of the exchange program with Gobelin, which is the animation school in France. Ooh. So I was looking forward to going to Paris, you know, the next year. I know, very fancy. So, you know, if I'd gotten a job, I wouldn't have been able to do that trip. So I wasn't too, you know, upset about not landing a job out of there.
Yeah, it definitely worked out. I have, so to get internships and, you know, get chosen to go to the French animation school for a semester, like, obviously your portfolio has to be like fantastic. In preparing your portfolio, like, what's your suggestion for folks putting together their portfolios for these awesome opportunities?
Yeah, so putting together a portfolio for an internship is basically just putting together a portfolio for that job description, be it a story portfolio or a VizDev portfolio. And there are specific guidelines to follow for both. I don't mean to toot my own horn by any means, but, you know, I'm very rule oriented. I'm pretty good at like following very specific guidelines very strictly. So I do still have my old portfolios up, and I think they're pretty good guidelines just for like the layout to go with. For story portfolios, the kind of rough rule is like 2 to 3 complete sequences plus some like character vignettes or story-based drawings, some comics if you want to throw it in there, but the bulk should really, really be focused on those like basic storyboards. VizDev is a little more complicated. You can kind of focus it a bit towards character or environment depending on what your strength is. But you really want to have a good mix of like quicker sketches that show your thought process versus more finished pieces that show how you can take that to a finished polish. I think a lot of people will organize their VizDev portfolios around story projects, whether that's, you know, an original story or adapting, adapting another story. I think Ming-Kyu Lee has this kind of famous Little Biz Dev presentation where he like designed Wicked, like, you know, the play Wicked for animation. And, you know, the advantage of centering, you know, your portfolio around, you know, 2 to 3 kind of story projects is that it kind of imbues every single drawing with a sense of story and like how it's going to fit into the overall project, which is good. Generally speaking, you want to avoid drawings that feel kind of purposeless or just kind of just standing alone. We can always do with a whole lot less of, you know, characters just kind of standing straight and looking ahead, maybe with an expression on their face. That doesn't hold a lot of story information, but it's kind of the default drawing that we tend to do, I think, is people who like characters and like drawing them over and over again. So like breaking out of that and showing, you know, range of acting and, you know, storytelling within visual drawings is really important.
Yeah, totally. I don't think we've had any guests that have went abroad to study animation. How was your experience at Gobelin?
It was so good. I recommend anyone who can study abroad, especially if they can go to Gobelin, please do it. It is lovely. Honestly, like the best part was just getting to live in Paris for 6 months. Yeah. That was amazing. It's just like, it's different from going on a vacation, you know, like living there and actually like really getting time to fully explore a city and just like having like a routine that is in France is great. I feel like I kind of got the best possible experience, studying abroad where, it was during the second semester, and at CalArts, we always spend our entire second semester making our student films. And so what I basically did, I just transplanted that experience over to Gobelin, where I was just like, well, here's my film that I plan to do, you know, my first semester. I'm just going to sit at this desk and do it. And every time I'm not, you know, every moment that I'm not doing this film, I'm going to go out and explore the city, and it's going to be great. I kind of went a little bit in defiance of the teachers there. They were very much like, oh, you know, for the experience. I'm so sorry for this accent. You know, for the experience of, you know, studying abroad in Paris, we think, I'm dropping the accent. I'm so sorry. You know, we think that, you know, you should really start over and, you know, come up with a new film idea that is going to be based purely in Paris. And like, again, me with my schedules and my rules, my guidelines, I was just like, no, this is the CalArts method. I'm going to stick to the CalArts method. If I was going to learn the Le Gobelin method, I would have come here a year earlier so I had time to plan. I can't just start over a film, you know, in the middle of film season. This is not going to happen. Because, you know, you go through CalArts for years, you see so many different ways that people's films can fail. Usually it's because people second guess themselves and try to restart way too late in the game. And so I was totally not down for that. And so like, I basically kind of, just talked them down and was like, this is what I'm doing. Got to deal with it. CalArts is still the actual school that I'm going to. You can't fail me. You don't have that power. So after a while, they just kind of stopped bothering me.
That's good.
And then I just got to, yeah, I basically just got to make my film, but also kind of watch the other students. And like, you know, those, like the Gobelin students are insanely talented. They are so good. And so just being surrounded by people who are so talented is amazing. And I made like a couple really good friends when I was there. We would hang out every day. And then on the weekends I would go and explore Paris. So it was just good. It was very good.
Yeah. I think the thing I love most about the work that comes out of that school is that there seems to be a variety of styles. And while because kind of over here, I feel like I've noticed certain schools, students come out with a particular style. And you can kind of sometimes always trace it back to where they went to school. Not always.
Are we talking about style?
Well, that's one of them, but also Art Center has one too.
Art Center has such a distinctive style. Yeah. So I don't know, like, I feel like Art Center, like, its base tends to be more in live action, if that makes sense. Like their stuff feels more live action-y. So I feel like there's less emphasis on kind of like specific animation styles, because kind of like, look, if you're designing them that's based in the real world, you can't redesign what a human looks like. There's a limited style range you can go with. That's always been my impression so far, but yes, they totally have you know, a school style, which I don't think is a bad thing, because like their level of quality is so insane.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
Like, they're the VisDev masters.
Yeah, even though I said that, they are beautiful, and I'm not going to bitch you for that. But I also love what you were saying about how students second guess them, or anyone, if they second guess, they don't necessarily finish their project or it meets their what they hoped for it. I definitely did that in college. My teacher didn't like my storyboard three times, and I redid it.
Oh my
redid
God.
The whole thing every single time and changed the entire story because he didn't like my sense of humor.
You know what I hate? I hate teachers who give notes with no concept of what time of year it is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, where it's like, okay, give those heavy notes early on. You know, give those notes in, you know, if you have to start production of your film in December, give those notes September, you know, October, maybe November, maybe. But like, yeah. Be realistic. And like, after a certain point, you know, the real choice is, you know, what's more important, that your specific notes get addressed or that this film gets made at all? You know, do you want an imperfect film or do you want no film at all? You know? Mm-hmm. And there were so, like, I still remember, like, a classmate who took notes from our color and design teacher, who really did not know that much about storytelling, and told him, you know, like, your story is too predictable. You know what would make this better? If it was told half in flashback, so that we're constantly going back and forth in time. It was a 4-minute film, to be clear. And like, that makes no sense as a story note whatsoever. I mean, unless it basically says like, I'm bored, make it weirder, make it Tarantino-y for no particular reason. And he redoing this board from scratch in like February when he had like, you know, a couple of months till the end of the year. Of course he didn't finish it. You know, like, what did they think was going to happen? And so, like, I always advise students, if you take critique from your teachers, be thoughtful about who you're asking, because not everyone's opinion is created equal, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also wish that I wouldn't have taken everyone's opinion. That's something I've learned as a professional. I wish I could take that back to my college, though. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you, as a student, you're like, I need to learn from everybody. So, like, you want to take everyone's advice. But, like, man, like, when people give advice, number one, some people may be very talented, but they're just not natural teachers. And sometimes those people get hired as teachers, you know, like, just realistically speaking. And two, like, it's so important to realize that just because you're good at one discipline in animation doesn't make you an expert in another discipline, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like the most very obvious example, I just saw, and I'm not going to name who this is, like a professional animator who's been working for decades in animation, has worked on some like really prestigious films, cannot color to save his life. Like, looks like when he tries to color things, it looks like a coloring book. It's absurd. And I think especially a lot of people who do viz dev, that doesn't necessarily mean that they can give story notes. You know, story is a very specific thing. And I would generally limit who you're getting critique from to the specific discipline you're trying to critique. Unless you're explicitly looking for like outsider opinions, in which case you're probably better just going to friends or family members who have no connection to it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely something about like taking an animatic to someone who isn't in the industry and being like, do you understand what's going on?
Yeah.
So a lot happened in college for you.
I know. Yeah, it was fun. It was good years.
So like, how did you finally break into the industry with a full-time job?
Oh, that is jumping ahead a bit.
Is there more? Did I skip a bunch?
So I graduate. Then I have the second Pixar internship. Sorry, it's always confusing because there's two of them.
Oh, right.
And like, I feel like it sounds so glamorous. I had two Pixar internships. But then you have to add on, and I didn't get hired after either of them. Like, I was clearly just, I struggled at both of them really, really badly. And the second one, I think I was kind of hired under false pretenses, to be super honest. Because we were just talking about Art Center, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of VisDev people, certainly on The Good Dinosaur, if not at Pixar in general, happen to have come from Art Center. And I feel like when you go to a certain school, there's an assumption that other people who go to art school also have a similar experience as you do. But Art Center has a really, really robust visual development curriculum. CalArts is more known for its story department. It does have a certain amount of like really good biz dev classes, but like we can't compete with Arts Center. And in particular, we don't have the technical background that Arts Center does. And so apparently my mentor insists that he hired me because he saw like one page of my portfolio had like some kind of abstract depictions of plants for my film Kagemono, which had kind of this watercolor look to it. And he said, like, this person really just wants to draw plants all day. That's their passion. Let's hire them to do photorealistic model sheets of plants. And like, it took me like fully halfway through the internship to realize like, oh, they think I know how to do this. Because what happened, well, like they basically sat me down and they were like, great, research Papua New Guinean plant life and make some model sheets off of it. And it was given very little instruction besides that. And when I was like, I don't know how to do a model sheet, they basically said, you know, oh, it's easy, you'll get it. And only halfway through did they suddenly stop and they're like, oh, wait, this person does not know how to do model sheets. Well, time to scrap everything they've been doing and start over again from scratch. And then I had to spend the entire second half of my internship redoing all of the locations that I'd done in the first half. Mm-hmm. And again, I was limited to trees and foliage. I got to do ferns too.
And like someone has to do it, but someone has to do it, but it's so wild that they give it to you for one page of plant drawings.
Well, the joke is on them because I realized after the fact that I had researched the wrong country, was entirely my fault. I swear at some point they mentioned Colombia, but they were mostly talking about Papua New Guinea. I didn't look up where Papua New Guinea is. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know why I didn't do it. But I was researching the wrong continent the entire time. As it so happened, the location got cut soon after. I don't think it's entirely because of my terrible research, but you know, none of it showed up in the final film in any capacity. Because at the time they were like, oh yeah, we want this really like storybook impressionistic style. You know, it's going to be really avant-garde. And then if you've seen the final film, you know that it doesn't look like that.
No.
So basically everything I did got cut out, which is fine because like I was just drawing photorealistic trees. So it's not a big loss.
Yeah, it really seems after some of these weird things that have happened to you during these internships that it could, like, with someone with, like, less confidence, it could have really, like, made them give up a little bit, like, make them feel like they were on the wrong path. Like, how did you stay confident and focused moving forward?
Well, I mean, in that particular case, I was very fortunate that I found out very soon after that internship ended, and incidentally, it ended with me not getting a job off after it, but also, like, it was such a disaster for the entire internship class that I kind of didn't feel as bad about it, because one, no other VizDev interns got hired, and three, the entire animation internship group was supposed to get hired on The Good Dinosaur, then it got knocked back 2 years because the story was very bad. And so they all got fired like a week after they were hired. So it was just like a massacre. So sometimes, you know, have misery loves company, etc. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like a week after I got that rejection, I found out that I was, you know, pretty much in the running for the trainee program at Disney. So I was able to hop from one to the other. Definitely the trainee program was a bigger letdown. Let's see. That was a 6-month internship. And at the end of it, it also very bad outcome. If I can tell a brief story of what happened the last year of that internship. So the recruiters first called in all of the animation interns into a room. And they told them, guys, we're so sorry, but we can't hire any of you. Just kidding, haha, you're all hired. And so of course all the animation interns came back to the intern room and told everybody this hilarious story about what happened to them. And then the BizDev, you know, artists get called in.
Oh my God.
And they say, guys, we're really sorry, but we can't hire any of you. And of course, we're just kind of like looking at them, like trying not to laugh, because we're like, ha ha, it's a joke. Ha ha, it's a funny joke. And then they just kind of stare at us.
Oh, no.
And, like, it wasn't a joke. And like, so like, I feel like my most initial way of coping with stuff is just to cry about it a lot, because I'm just like, I have feelings. Everyone needs to know about them right now. So I just start crying in the room, you know? Also, just like, you kind of want to make them feel bad for, not want to, like, that wasn't like, it wasn't like a manipulation thing, but it was kind of like, yeah.
It's understandable. Yeah.
Like, yeah, you did this. You should see, you made me sad. You know, like, I don't feel a need to hide this. But I'm also like, I'm very kind of like, if something bad happens to me, I will just kind of like, you know, vomit it all over social media immediately. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'm like crying, I go back to my desk and immediately just like load up Facebook and it's like, guys, I didn't get the job. Everyone should know about this right now. I'm just like, I just don't hide that stuff. I'm like, I'd be like, I'm really, really sad and everyone needs to know. And it so happened that Darren Nefcy, the creator of Star Wars: The Forces of Evil, had just gotten greenlit for her first season. And so that very day, she reached out and was like, hey, do you want to come in for an interview? And so generally speaking, because I'm so annoyingly open when bad things happen to me, and like when I don't get jobs and I don't get this or that, sometimes that has the effect of letting people know like, oh, you're available. And sometimes that can actually cause like opportunities to come your way when they might not otherwise. So yeah, being open about your availability is always my number one recommendation to people.
Because I feel like people mm-hmm. sometimes hide it because they don't want folks to know that like they didn't get hired mm-hmm. for something or that they didn't get the job and it reflects on them, you know. So I love the openness that you carry.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not, you know, it's not like being messy for days and days and days. I'll usually have like, you know, one announcement and that'll kind of be it. And then I'll have, you know, like available for work, you know, clearly visible in my profile. And, you know, just kind of gets it out there and then you can go and cry or whatever. And then it's fine.
Yeah.
And like,
mm-hmm. when do you think, you know, because we do have to be like slightly careful with what we put on social media. Where do you think the line is in being too open?
Like, I probably wouldn't have shared that story about how they played that weird joke on us. That was, yeah. I share it now because it's been so long, and I think most people who were involved in that prank are no longer at the studio. And also, I don't hold it against them. I think they're super nice people in general. You know, try and avoid saying anything too negative about like the people who rejected you publicly. I think, you know, just kind of keeping it fairly short and sweet of, you know, like, hey, so it turns out I didn't get the job, really bummed about it. But hey, I'm available for work, you know, and kind of keeping it short and sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But accepting condolences, you know, if one's, you know, someone who's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm also sad. I'm sad.
Yeah. Cause I do feel like we have to ask for what we want. Cause otherwise people who are hiring will never know that you want that thing and that you are available. So I think that's a great idea to let people know.
Yeah. Those simple three words of like available for work are so important, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And having a clear social media presence.
Yeah. It like, I'm amazed, like, seeing so many people find, like, writing jobs through Twitter, mm-hmm. like, in the from comedy scenes onto, like, writing teams. Like, it's been really interesting as I'm on Twitter more to see that happen.
Mm.
I never would have thought before I understood how Twitter worked.
Mm-hmm. Twitter's so important,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
So you didn't get hired at Disney Feature, and then, like, what happened next?
So basically, for the next 5 months, I was straight job hunting, and that was probably one of the toughest parts of my career. I mean, like, it's just common that, like after graduation, that's the hardest part. That's the hustle. That's, like, the really unpleasant part that very few people manage to avoid. I didn't have the hardest time because I happened to land some freelance work, like, I would say a few weeks after the show, the internship ended. on a show called Wander Over Yonder. Mm-hmm. And that kind of kept me, you know, doing a little bit of work on the side pretty consistently and feeling like I had something to do for a few months. But aside from that, you know, I had really decided I want to go into story. You know, this biz dev thing is really not for me. So I started taking story tests for television. And I think I took about 5 tests, but I think, like, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that many. In my defense, one of those tests was the infamous Gravity Falls test with the pterodactyl. If anyone is familiar, that is the longer test that they had before they possibly were forced to redo it with the cow test later on. It was super long and exhausting. And, you know, I did a few aside from that. But eventually, like, there came a point where I'd applied for all these things, and just, like, the rejections were just kind of starting to come in one after the other. First, I was initially being considered for the art director position for Star vs. Forces of Evil, the first season. Very nice of Darren to consider me. Wildly incorrect impression of who I am, what I can do. Let's see, I was considered for another trainee position at Blue Sky Studios. Really awkward interview. I still remember that. We're just like, it was a phone call, and like, so you couldn't see anybody, but you could tell you were like on a conference call with like 5 people in a story room. Mm-hmm. And so you just heard a lot of shuffling. We're like, only one of them ever spoke, but you could just hear the shuffles from the other people and all these long pauses. And they didn't really have anything to ask me. They're just kind of like, so what kind of films do you like? And me just trying to sound like chipper and engaged and just like getting absolutely nothing back. You know, 7 years later, I still remember how awful that interview was.
Oh, that's so awkward.
didn't get a call back from that. There was also the Nickelodeon Artist Program. And, you know, I applied, didn't hear back from it for a suspiciously long time. And I still also remember getting the phone call from Nick and be like, oh, it's Nickelodeon. And then the phone call was, so you can pick up your portfolio now.
Aww.
I was like, oh, I still remember that crushing defeat. I'm just like, that was it. That was the last offer I had, and that's gone. They didn't even tell me no. That's how bad it was. I had one more. I did have one job offer, which was for years the only job offer I ever actually turned down, was for Planes 3. If anyone actually remembers the Planes franchise, it was a spin-off of the Cars franchise. There was a period of time where John Lasseter was not allowed to make Cars 3, supposedly because Ed Catmull had told him, like, this will ruin our studio's reputation. No one likes Cars 2. Please don't make Cars 3. Clearly, he eventually, you know, wore him down. But at the time, he wasn't allowed to make Cars 3. And so he basically commandeered the studio that had once made the Disney sequels back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Disney Toon, right?
Disney Toon Studio, to make the Planes movies, which were intended originally for a straight to DVD, but he was really, really convinced that they were going to be a huge hit. And so he kind of greenlit several sequels, I think before the first one ever hit theaters. And I was being considered because they needed a girl storyboard artist because they'd never had one before. Because for the third film, there was going to be a romantic subplot between the hilarious breakout Mexican luchador plane and a pink girl plane. And you can tell she's a girl because she's pink. And that is the only job I've ever turned down, you know, without having a job lined up afterwards.
Like, that's so weird. Like, what was the feeling that you were getting from your gut exactly?
It just felt like a dead end. I mean, that particular job or in general?
Whichever you want to say.
Definitely. It was dark. You know, it was very dark at a point. And I think I kind of moved past it where I was just kind of like, just got to keep taking tests. Just keep trudging forward. And I know that a lot of people have taken many, many, many more tests before landing their first job. So I'm not trying to talk like, oh my God, my experience was so difficult. It really wasn't in hindsight. But, you know, while I was finishing yet another test, months after I'd applied to the Gravity Falls job, I got, you know, an email out of the blue being like, hey, we liked your test. Come be a revisionist. And that was that. So, yeah.
Glad that finally worked out. and like, what, how did it feel to get that call? Like, do you remember like your first day or just getting the yes?
It was, oh yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. I think I was, I have a weird, like, you know, sense memory. I strongly remember like being like, yes, I still need to finish the star test though. And so like, I kind of like was celebrating, but then like still need to finish my thing while watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And also I remember my parents were out on vacation. I was house sitting. So I was just like, yes, to myself, I'm going to go get McDonald's. And so like, there wasn't a lot of people to celebrate with, but you know, as it was such a weight off my chest. It was amazing. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm.
And so since then, you've worked on like these huge hits at Disney, Gravity Falls, Star vs. Forces of Evil, and then The Owl House. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Like, how does it feel to work on such beloved like shows?
It's fun, you know, like it's fun to work on a show that has like a very dedicated following and a fan base, to feel like there's a little bit of fanfare whenever you get to release a new episode. And of course, I feel like the biggest advantage is, you know, working with some like truly world-class artists. Not that, you know, only hit shows have great artists, of course, but I mean, like, it, like, I feel like I learned so much in particular from like Gravity Falls, where we had, you know, Alonzo Ramirez, as a board artist there before he became a director, and his draftsmanship skills are just out of this world, and his like film, like his ability to just kind of like evoke so much with a single storyboard drawing. I feel like everybody was really competing with each other, you know, in a friendly manner to, you know, just make every episode better and better and better. And I feel like on Star there was such a strong sense of like camaraderie within the story department. And like, I made, you know, some of the best friends ever from that experience. And I have such like pleasant memories of that production. So, you know, there's a lot really great about, you know, working on those shows.
Mm-hmm. When was the, like, let's see, how long were you a storyboard revisionist for?
So I kind of lucked out. I kind of like to say that I tend to get promoted whenever like an angry white man quits his job. So for Gravity, a few months in, one of the directors had a fight with Alex, and he, you know, quit kind of in the middle of season two, which opened up a position for a new director. So another board artist got bumped up to director, and then, you know, I got bumped up to board artist, which was cool. And then on Star.
Oh, real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have to advocate for yourself and let them know that you wanted to be a storyboard artist, or did they already have you in mind?
Oh, I was very, very fortunate for that particular move up. They already had me in mind.
Oh, that's fantastic. And then with Star, you were saying?
Yeah, with Star, that was a little bit more of a process, but also like I was very supported by Darren, and also the supervising producers, who recommended me for a new mentorship program that had been started up at Disney TV. And so like, even before there was necessarily a position open, by just recommending me for this position that was basically, you know, like, you know, if you're a board artist, you know, they pair you with a director to mentor and to shadow them. Just being part of that program just kind of keeps you in mind for promotion for the studio in general. And sort of, it primes you to, you know, to move up. And then when a position did open up at the end of season three, I was able to make that transition pretty smoothly. I think I did occasionally have to kind of, you know, keep an eye on it and be like, hey, like, are you still considering me? But it was a really, really, like, fairly easy transition, to be super honest. Mm-hmm. And it really does help when you have a crew which, you know, nurtures and cares for its artists, who gives them opportunities. There are some shows that really, really promote that and give people opportunities, you know, to move up or to try out positions, you know, to try writing an outline or to try directing an episode. Which is so, so valuable.
I think that's so cool that they do that kind of mentorship within their structure. So when you became a director, did you get a class on management at all?
No. So how not did, at all.
That's I hear that a lot. So how did you cultivate management skills?
Did I? I feel like, oh my goodness. I mean, like, I feel like this is such an issue, which I feel needs to be addressed, is that directors are not given any kind of training whatsoever. I feel like I was given more than most just because they had that mentorship program. But the person I mentored with, who was really, really great, was also quite busy. They don't give people time to mentor. And so there's this idea of like, oh, we need to, you know, train the next generation. We need to train people. You know, we can't just abandon people as soon as they get into positions and you know, watch them fail. But there's no time in the schedule, at least in a TV schedule, for that kind of thing. And,
yeah. And I assume they don't get paid for it either, right?
Oh, of course not. I mean, like, you know, directors do get a pay bump. So I feel like pay-wise, that's not a concern for me. But the concern is the time. Oftentimes, you know, it's ultimately more efficient if you can teach people early on and then, you know, so you're not just fixing mistakes over and over and over again. In practice, you're often so busy just trying to catch up on the work that you only have time to kind of fix things right at the end. And a lot of productions have kind of adopted that mentality, which I don't think is very healthy, and it doesn't make people very happy. But the schedule just ends up kind of creating the situation. And like, there are some artists, I know like Ben Duomo on Moon Girl, who are very, very passionate about teaching. And it helps that he has a teaching background. Mm-hmm. But like, it's something you really have to go out of your way to do. And to be super honest, I'm not a natural teacher. I'm a very natural student. I like pleasing authority figures. I don't like being one. And like, it definitely doesn't come super easy for me. It's something I'm still very much working on. Though at the end of the day, it kind of just comes down to communication, you know, and honesty, ideally, mm-hmm. Whenever you can. That's the long and short of it. But, you know, obviously there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, especially like you just mentioning that, like, or you mentioning earlier that you love to follow the rules. I can imagine it could be quite an obstacle to then be the one who makes the rules.
Yeah, or like I, you know, there are people of different personality types, and some people, you know, I'm the sort of person who, like, if you tell me once, I will follow that rule to a T and tell me until you tell me to do something different. Whereas, like, I mean, I had a little bit of trouble with that, you know, like, earlier this year with, you know, like, COVID guidelines, when it was, and it used to be, you know, never ever take off your mask, you know, rules about masks that still are in place, you know, like, watching, say, like, the Black Lives Matter protests and seeing people, you know, out there in the open with masks off chanting or singing, and I'm kind of like, but that wasn't the rule. I'm just like confused. Like, I just can't. It takes me like months to readjust when a rule changes. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily operate like that. In fact, I'd probably consider that like most artists don't. Most artists are probably not the type who like rigid structure in that way. And so dealing with people who are not as rule oriented as I am is always like a little bit of a struggle. But part of the job, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This was part one of my interview with Sabrina Catuno. Tune in Thursday for part two. The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Tunes. This episode was produced by me with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle, edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.